If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
What action going back and forth?
Got an ass like an amphitheater.
It begins with a U, it ends with an A. Has a meal on your shoulder.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. As the other Cultaholic lads are recovering, resting, rejuvenating themselves after a frantic, frenetic week of Premier Wrestling, we have decided that's not enough wrestling. We need to consume more wrestling. We need to go back in our Ica Pro Power DeLorean to 1994, to the halcyon days of Monday Night Raw. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell, and I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic. If you were to hand him a pencil, do you know what he'd do? He'd turn that sumbitch sideways and hand it back to you, because he doesn't need it. He gets it right every time with a pen. He is Justin Henry, and he is off of America.
I almost forgot how to do this show.
Do you know what's nice? And I was thinking about this, mate. It feels like we've had a nice big house party, and John Eiley's been here, and Matthew Gregg's been here, and we played party games and all this stuff. And now it feels like all the guests have gone, and it's back to me and you. And there's a lovely warmth and joy that comes from that.
Yes, now we got to clean everything up, and there's still somebody passed out on the floor in their own puke.
John Eiley's been sick in the toilet again. John!
It's very almost like abstract art coming from John, really.
Do you know what? Yeah, somehow John even makes vomit around the toilet look beautiful. Don't know how he does it. It's incredible work.
Amazing. It's very Picasso-ish.
It is, really is. So thank you very much to John Eiley, who joined us for the March to WrestleMania podcast. And a massive thank you to Matthew Gregg, who joined us for the WrestleMania 10 watch along as well. Do you know what? We've had some fun as we've rocked WrestleMania 10, haven't we, Justin?
Oh, absolutely. It's unfortunately, it's all downhill from here as the new generation kicks off.
This is it now, isn't it? This is the beginning of the new generation era. From this point on, we are getting inundated with new generation eras.
Yeah, Mania 10 was like the last hurrah before like a long prison sentence.
That was our final meal. And, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it. I've got a couple of notes before we get underway.
Okay.
In fact, if you could do us the honor and privilege of saying where and when we are for this episode.
Well, it is the day after WrestleMania, and we are live. It is Monday, March 21st, 1994, and we're at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York.
At this point in time, according to the Wrestling Observer, Jesse Ventura is about to go to court against Titan. He's suing, claiming he deserved a better cut of his merchandise as part of the WWF because his deal was made under duress. He also deserves a percentage of videotape sales because his voice was used on so many of the tapes. Now, is this why... Like, and I don't know whether the two are connected, because I seem to have this vivid memory, Justin, of watching old wrestling, particularly through WCW, with Jesse's voice not in it.
You are correct on that, if I recall correctly, reading Ventura's book, I Ain't Got Time to Bleed, which is a very fascinating read. He asked Vince one time about royalties, since his voice is used on all these videos, whether it's pay-per-view or whatever. And Vince apparently told him point blank, Jesse, nobody gets royalties, not even Hogan. Well, that was BS. And when Jesse learned that, that's when he took Vince to court and subsequently to the cleaners. As in about a month from this point, Ventura gets a huge financial finding from the court. They found in his favor. So the financially strapped WWE at this point just took a takes an even bigger hit very, very soon.
Thanks to Jesse Ventura rightly claiming that he wants some pennies.
And I should point out, you are right about the editing of Ventura off of other releases, because it was partially so they wouldn't have to owe Jesse anything. And they really I remember getting this one VHS like around like 2 years after this point. It was like Best WrestleMania Matches, which had Steiners versus Hedrickers versus Steiners on it for some reason. I have no idea why. But it also had Savage and Steamboat and Hogan and Andre with dubbed over commentary by Monsoon and Stan Lane.
Wow. Oh, wow. That is not a gift you want.
I mean, I like Stan Lane and everything, but come on. You need Jesse there. Look at the size of the giant.
I remember the call where when Monsoon said, Hogan's 6 foot ten, and Ventura going, well, Andre is 7 foot five. What? No.
Well, it is larger than life pro wrestling.
Exactly, exactly. So whilst that is happening with Ventura and Titan Sports, The Undertaker is not on this episode of Raw. He is currently in Japan. He is getting the PR machine a-whirring for Japan ahead of their big shows over there. Yokozuna, Bret Hart, Randy Savage, Tatanka, Bigelow, Michaels, Adam Bomb, Doink the Clown, 1-2-3 Kid, The Head Shrinkers, Smoking Guns, Owen Hart, Lex Luger, and Backlund, along with several of the Japanese performers there, will be a part of the big tour as well.
Well, Tommy, you just lied to the people right there.
Did I?
Yes, Tinker's dead, remember? He died at the Royal Rumble.
Okay, Brian Lee is in Japan.
Thank you.
Imagine, do you reckon then when he goes to the airport, they won't let him on the plane? Because, like, mate, this is blatantly a dead man's passport.
It was like Tinker's Krusty and Brian Lee's Homer as Krusty.
Unless you both go through the loop together.
What did the Japanese audience make of Yokozuna, do you reckon?
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I mean he's not Japanese, but he was playing a Polynesian Samoan whatever who became a sumo champion, because you don't have to be Japanese to be a sumo champion necessarily. But they just kept saying, you know, he's from Japan. Although I don't know if they ever actually said that he is Japanese specifically.
Ah, but they always said he was just from Japan.
But they never said he was really anything else. He's an American from San Francisco who became a sumo champion and has embraced the culture. Never said that.
That's very true. It's being ecumenical with the truth, as I suppose they were, which would probably make a bit more sense.
He's the 600-pound Japanese experience.
That's what it is. That's what it is. So, on to this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. The first time that we've ever been live after a WrestleMania, I do believe.
Correct, because last year's show was in the can from 2 weeks earlier, and they were just dubbing over new commentary hinting at what happened on the show. And now, at this point in time, we're still not in the modern era of post-WrestleMania Raws, where it's a raucous crowd that flew in from around the world. They fill a big 20,000-seat arena, and they're nuts for everything with their soccer chants and their sort of hijacking of the shows. This is it's your very typical docile Monday Night Raw crowd from 1994.
But we did get some nice surprise returns.
We did.
Not the sort of returns, we're quite far removed from the NXT debuts after WrestleMania, but we did get some big returns, you could say, on this particular episode.
Are you saying that they didn't call up the Bushwhackers from NXT at this point?
they were massive. They were big. Do you know what? The thing is, the Bushwhackers, they were technical legends in NXT. They put on 35-minute absolute barnstormers of demolition. They came up here and they just reduced them to the battering ram. It was very sad.
Yes, they were known as the Undisputed Error. The song, da-da-da. Dan, 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 dan,
dan, the yay, yay.
G'day.
I can see Butch and Kyle O'Reilly being there.
Although we were,
Kyle O'Reilly being related.
We're not a million miles away. Oh, that's mean. We're not a million miles away from that kind of being a thing, because before they came to the WWF, the Bushwhackers were indeed a more edgy act as the Sheepherders.
Oh, yes. They were a very violent tag team. They had some very gory barbed wire matches with the Fantastics, Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, back in the territory days. They were sort of ECW before ECW.
But they made their most money licking heads and using one as a battering ram. That was where they made their big money.
Well, life is strange.
Exactly. So over to you, sir. Let's get through an episode of Monday Night Raw together.
Well, keep in mind, this is the day after perhaps the biggest WrestleMania ever to this point. Not in terms of crowd size, but in terms of overall action. Later on in the show, when Stan Lane voices everyone says this is the greatest WrestleMania of all time, he may not be wrong. at this point in time, it's either this or three, depending on your taste and how you feel. I could go either way on it, but I'd probably still lean towards three just for the crowd and the Intercontinental title match.
Yeah, I feel like I would as well.
And of course, Hulk Andre, just the sheer magnitude of it. But, I mean, if this is second place, it ain't second by much. So the show starts off with no highlights, no exposition for what happened yesterday afternoon, no cold opening, just straight to the intro, which is a bit unusual given the auspiciousness of the previous day. It just feels like any old Raw at this point.
The only big... I mean, Vince McMahon sounded up for it. Like, his voice was shot to pieces from WrestleMania. But he sounded like he was up for it.
Vince's voice on this show, he sounds like he was gargling razor blades for like 6 hours before showtime.
He sounds like my voice from the other week, when my voice just completely gave out for several videos. Bless him.
Yeah, Vince is pressing on after saying blast off into the next decade a million times during the final match. And Vince is here with the all-time great Macho Man Randy Savage, which is slang for he ain't ever going to wrestle on TV again.
Aww, it's sad, isn't it? It's sad.
And Savage is still going on about how he could have been champion at this point if Crush had just not interfered in his business. He could have beaten Yoko and then gone on to beat Luger and Bret in that two-match parlay.
I kind of thought that was a bit offside from Savage, because it's that thing of, you know, push ahead to the great stuff that happened at WrestleMania. Don't bang on about, it would have been me if it hadn't been for this that happened weeks ago. McMahon was able to sort of turn it around and make it relevant again, but I thought a bit off color for Savage.
Well, I think Vince felt a little blindsided by it, because I don't think he has any real plans to do anything with Savage at this point. Like, we use you for Mania, now go sit down.
Well, you will. We'll revisit that statement at the end of the show, shall we?
A little bit, because Savage does get a little physically involved.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if that goes somewhere. And we kick off the new era of WWE, this new generation, with Bret Hart on top. And it's the new decade, blasting off in the new decade, as Vince incessantly said at the end of WrestleMania 10. With the Quebecers versus the Bushwhackers in a non-title match.
Oh, yes. Welcome to the future. Welcome to the future. Bushwhackers look great, though. They look like they hadn't aged a day.
Well, because they've always been like 50 years old.
Exactly.
They were born 50. They just walk out of the woods one day doing the march. They were never actually just born. They were like two woodland creatures. Yay, whoa.
Yeah, this was a peculiar way to start your new generation with the Bushwhackers.
I wrote in my notes, Bushwhackers don't even have hats. Budget cuts are a bitch.
I never thought about that. They lost their hats, didn't they? Never even crossed my mind.
Yeah, it just isn't right. It's like Randy Savage without his sunglasses.
Aw.
Raven does the cabbage patches, which makes me happy. The first however many minutes of this match are just Bushwhacker-style comedy. A lot of biting, a lot of ass-biting. Quebecers do a do-si-do that fails, or an Alaman left, whatever that is. And I realized this match, it's like WrestleMania 5, but with Pierre replacing Ray Rougeau.
It is, isn't it? It is. So again, your new generation, your new era. Here's a match that three quarters of which was from WrestleMania 5 years ago.
Except with Raven replacing Jimmy Hart and Randy Savage not wrestling.
You're pretty much there.
5 years ago, Savage was in the main event of the most bought WrestleMania in history to that point. Now he's just stuck at the commentary desk.
No, now he's an all-time great.
Yes, he's got a foot in the grave, according to Vince. We keep giving him gold watches. He won't leave. Savage got a trunk full of watches he's selling. Check it out, they're hot.
He keeps signing me off, but I keep coming back in.
I'm just doing it for the watches at this point.
John, hello, mate. I haven't worked you very hard the last couple of weeks. So, John, I would like Randy a Photoshop, please, of Randy Savage at a car boot sale / a flea market selling a whole load of watches.
Vince is giving me so many watches that it went into the Bushwhackers hat budget.
Oh, the Bushwhackers are furious. They start wearing some of the gold watches on their heads.
And if you want to know just how bad the budget hits are at this point, we have some master tape issues during this match.
No. This is only the work of the Fiend. If I know anything from wrestling in 2019, this is the Fiend's doing.
All right, for those of you who haven't watched this episode, there's about 30 seconds during the course of this match, during the alleged heat segment, where the video, the picture just goes out. It's sort of like, how would you describe how it faded out? It was like the picture kind of smeared a little bit.
It got distorted. Then it kind of crackled. Then it went completely dark.
And you then still hear Vince.
You could still hear comms. I think there were problems with commentary as well. I felt like Savage was sort of dipping in and out all night. So there was certainly some technical unrest on this particular evening.
I think somebody spilled some like IcoPro protein powder on the master tape of this episode.
I kind of hoped that as opposed to it being an IcoPro based disaster, that they've had this ingenious idea in the WWE to really integrate the Fiend character. And to pick random old episodes from the archives of the network for a little while and just insert little Fiend-based shenanigans in different places. Like you're watching the Chi-Town Rumble. Suddenly it just starts getting all choppy and crunchy. And then you see very briefly a Fiend pop up before we go back to the matches.
Well, now I'm paranoid because, you know, we made fun of the Fiend's father on commentary about 2 months ago.
He could be haunting this very podcast.
Could be. We did take IRS to the cleaners for just being the most boring commentator this side of a science class skeleton.
Well, hopefully he's not doing anything particularly dull on this episode for us to take the Michael out of him with.
You know what? I'm still gonna make fun of him. I don't care.
Yeah, we ain't scared.
It's during this part of the show that Vince apologizes for no 10-man tag at WrestleMania 10, but promises that it'll take place in 2 weeks, a fortnight.
The problem is, I don't mind, but at WrestleMania, Men on a Mission did assure me that this one's in the bag.
Yes.
How'd it get out of the bag? How'd it fall out of the bag?
Well, it was a very loose bag because of the budget cuts. We have to use flimsy ones.
Yeah, very flimsy bags in the baggage area. Very upset. So hopefully now in 2 weeks' time, it's definitely in the bag.
Yes, hopefully. Although I can assure you that through the taping of this episode, of three episodes of Raw on this night, the 10-man tag does take place.
Good. That's fine then. It's definitely in the bag and it's in the can. The bag is in the can.
Which sounds like it's trash.
Well, we'll wait and see the match.
Very well then. I was happy to see Butch hit a five-knuckle shuffle at one point.
That was amazing. That was class. That was a little movie to bust out. John Cena making a note somewhere.
John Cena stole his camouflage and his trucker caps and the five-knuckle shuffle from Bushwhacker Butch.
Oh, my God. John Cena is a Bushwhacker.
Bushwhacker John.
John! You know what to do, John.
Dun-dun-dun, yay! Dun-dun-dun, yay!
That is all yours to do with what you will, John. John's had a couple of weeks off doing Photoshops for our podcast, so I feel like we should
actually
load him up.
Actually, he did one for me the other day. Spur of the moment.
Did he?
Yes. You know editor Andrew from Cultaholic?
Yes.
he had a rather funny moment when we were conversing. I'm going to say privately, but he asked me a question about one of my scripts, and he literalized something that made me laugh. And so I had John do a Photoshop to commemorate Andrew's little misunderstanding. Shall I explain it?
Yes, please.
Okay, by the time you hear this, the Cultaholic feature in question may have been released. It's we're doing a bit. It's I won't even reveal what it is, but I'll say this. I made reference to Frankie Kazarian and his very brief time with WWE in 2005 that a lot of people don't even remember. And at one point, I talk about Kazarian's cup of coffee with the E. Now, Tom, if I'm saying the E, what am I referring to here?
Big E Langston, obviously.
Okay, but seriously.
WWE.
Correct. So Andrew, who is a great kid and a very talented editor, I must say that much about him. I love the guy. He messages me to say he's a little confused because he thinks the E might mean Robbie E. And he can't find any reference to him working in WWE at any point. And he can't find any statement in which Kazarian had a cup of coffee with anybody.
Oh, what?
So now, Tom, if I were to say that Kazarian had a cup of coffee with some sort of entity, what is that referencing? What am I saying?
It means, well, I'm an old grizzled veteran like you are, and I know that means he was there for just a short amount of time.
Correct. So he's trying to find this mythical segment where Kazarian is sipping Java with somebody called the E, perhaps Robbie E. There are many E's, but this one is mine. But no, I had a hearty chuckle at that.
This is basically the interactions that myself and yourself have with Sydney from the Cultaholic Discord, but in the real office workspace. Because it's once again, like, them young'uns not understanding our old lexicon.
I mean, people still drink coffee today. Isn't that still like a common slang for an all too brief period with?
I mean, I certainly use it, but more often than not, it's almost like I think the phrase, like the idea of having a cup of coffee with whatever is normally to have a figurative literal cup of, or a literal cup of coffee. I think it's one of those phrases that doesn't get used enough, and I think it's one of those phrases that we should bring back. In the same way that I pioneered bringing back the phrase shenanigans, we should most definitely try and bring back a cup of coffee. For the sake of Andrew, one of our fabulous video editors here at Cultaholic.
Yes, once a week going forward, we have to say cup of coffee with just to... in case Andrew listens to this show, I don't know if he does, but it'd be beneficial for his young wrestling education to hear us talk about cups of coffee so that he can commit it to memory and learn how idioms work.
If Andrew or James or Owen or Richard from Cultaholic listen to this podcast, those are four names you probably don't hear associated with Cultaholic, but they are our incredible team of video editors that work behind the scenes, and they deserve all the love in the world, because a lot of the times, if most of the times, there's incredible videos that you watch, the lists that you watch, some of the news videos we put out, it's them bad boys that are bringing our nonsense to life, and they deserve more than a cup of coffee as gratitude from us.
Yes, all great kids and in truth, the heart of the operation.
Absolutely, absolutely. More love to them.
And I'm just busting Andrew's balls. He knows this.
Oh, Andrew's class. Don't worry about it. He's fine with it. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, speaking of balls, this match is utterly balls.
Oh, isn't it dreadful? Did you enjoy the worst ever, oops, I accidentally hit my partner? Behind Lex Luger doing it in the Doomsday Cage.
It is kind of in slow motion because it is the Bushwhackers, and you kind of have to expect that. They're not really the most physically nimble guys, especially at this point in their career. And Savage has the balls at one point to say the action has been at a fever pitch.
I have a fever in a pitch as opposed to a fever pitch. I would be more accurate.
I think what was great was during this match, Vince reminds us that we can get WrestleMania results from the previous day by calling the WWF hotline. Boy, did the internet... First off, let me just say, boy, did the internet ruin this.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine a time, especially like in this day and age where we have information available at our fingertips? I can refresh Wikipedia every 10 minutes and figure out who won the last match on the show that I'm not even watching because somebody has posted it. Here it is, 9 o'clock on a Monday night.
If you want to find out who won between Leilani Kai and Alundra Blaze, it's only $1.99 for the first minute. Just call this number. But like, how primitive is this?
That is something special. That is something very special.
This is some Oregon Trail stuff here. This is like wait, it took people that long to travel across country? Wait, it took people that long to call a hotline and find out results?
We get into the stuff with the WWF Network a little bit later on that I'm very excited about.
So, Raven hits Butch in the head. Pierre pins Butch with a charging knee to the back. Then after the match, Vince interviews the three. He's talking to the Quebecers and his fellow future ECW champion, Raven. That just cracks me up. Vince and Raven, future ECW champions.
That is a weird... It is a weird time. It is a weird time.
And Raven, while still selling his throat from getting knocked into the guardrail, and he's selling it vigorously, I should point out, talks about how they're going to take on anybody, which is interrupted by Super Mario, a.k.a. Captain Lou Albano. He's always going to be Super Mario to me. I don't care. Through the Mario, swing your arms. He says, so since Raven says that, you know, Quebecers will take on anybody, Albano wants to make sure that he's a man of his word and says, I'll put a team together for them to face. Will they accept? And will it be for the belts? And the three confer and say, yeah, sure, why not? It'll be for the belts. So Albano's going to have a tag team for the Quebecers to face, evidently.
I'll tell you what gives it away. That this is now a block of tapings, and this is brave new world for wrestling at this point. The idea of having live shows and then like a block of tapings. I know we did that bit with Superstars, but then those are just sort of like encapsulated matches as opposed to like storyline driven stuff as much as Raw is, because we've got Lou Albano who's talking saying, if I can put together a tag team, will you put the belts on the line? And Albano is gesturing to the back. And then the Quebecers are going, yeah, you go get a tag team, which suggests like that's going to happen like in a minute, which is the live crowd. It is. But then Vince McMahon is the one that literally, I think one of the last things he says is next week, they'll do that because that was just something that I noticed. You don't see that happening these days with big blocks of tapings because we've got it down to a fine art now.
I kind of miss the taping format, though, but of course, I'm just an old fogey like that.
How excited are you, fellow old fogey, about NWA Power next week?
Oh, my God. Once I saw the photo of the actual studio, which is the very simple logo on the banner around the ring, I'm like, oh, my goodness.
This is all our dreams, isn't it?
It feels like Crockett, like the most minute detail.
And more power, no pun intended, to the NWA for doing it like this. So they've seen NXT, which is like this big production, AEW, which is an even bigger production, fireworks, pyro, lasers, da da da. And they've gone, we can't compete money wise. So you know what? Let's make something that feels so different. Let's go to a sound stage. Let's put the interview area on the one side. Let's put a ring in the middle and the crowd facing the. Oh, it just looks so good. I'm genuinely buzzing for NWA Power.
If I had told you 15 years ago that the man who was going to restore tradition to pro wrestling was the man who sang, despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage. Would you believe me?
I would not have believed you for a second, my friend.
Billy Corgan, of all people. I mean, hey, more power to him. I love the Smashing Pumpkins, and I love old NWA, so this is double win.
Fair play to Billy. Big love to Billy.
So, we have a WrestleMania 10 video with Stan Lane narrating, which feels very, very weird. Speaking of old NWA guys, although he's already calling Sean Razor one of the all-time great matches, and that is apropos.
Yeah,
like it was evident immediately that what had just happened was transcendent.
If there was something about it, I mean, like we took the mickey on that entire commentary track that we recorded, which you can get on the podcast now, and you can watch WrestleMania with myself, Justin, and Matthew Gregg. We took the Michael for most of that, but I noticed there was a distinct drop-off in Michael taking during that match, because even now it feels like a special match.
Oh, yeah, it's just Sean took every bump imaginable, and in 1994, the bumps he was taking were just, like, you know, ahead of their time. Like, every ladder match since then has kind of, you know, aped that match to a degree because it set the template. And Sean had no problem pinballing off of every one of Scott Hall's strikes and throws. And Sean took a beating in that match, and boy, did he get himself overdoing it.
He just bounced around like a pinball and made history in doing so.
If you had to make the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers who became stars after losing a match, it's got to be Sean in this match, Austin against Bret at Mania 13, Mankind in Hell in a Cell against Undertaker, and I'm not sure what the fourth one would be.
Barry Horowitz against Candido.
No, he won that match.
But didn't he lose one first?
No, he beat Candido the first time out.
Oh, I thought he lost one, then he won one.
And of all things, you pick that.
let me have a genuine think on what that would have been. You lost.
If I had to go like the territory days, I go DiBiase in Mid-South when he faced Ric Flair after he was attacked beforehand and busted wide open by Dick Murdoch, and he tried to valiantly fight back and couldn't quite do it.
Oh, I like that one. That was nice. Big fan of that one. Who else was made by a loss? I'm Adam Pacitti from Cultaholic.com, and here are 10 superstars that were made by a loss. Join us.
Hello, I'm Adam Pacitti from Cultaholic.com, and here are 10 wrestlers who are made by a loss. Join us.
You sound a bit like Jameson when you do that impression. I bought my glasses.
I can't see, goddammit, with that shirky voice.
Where do I get my hands on that genius? I'm going to thrash him.
I think Jameson was the inspiration for the jerky boys bit. And I'll bring all my glasses. Sal Rosenberg.
I'm going to get back to you on who was made by a loss, because I think you picked some of the ones I probably would have picked myself there. But I'm going to come back to you on that one, because I think that's quite an interesting topic.
I mean, goddamn, Mankind literally died for our sins in the match he was in.
Oh, didn't he just?
Everyone forgets Taker was the one who won the match. It was just Mankind's one-man show of dying over and over again.
Jeez.
So speaking of dying, we go to the IRS bit.
Oh, mate, we are blessed with IRS tonight.
He is trying to flex his comic muscle here. It's just him sitting at desk giving reasons why to pay taxes, reasons why we're all tax cheats. And they're just kind of like out of order. And he's like, reason number 46 why you're a tax cheat. Because you want to see the national debt go up. Very Letterman-ish.
I like the fact that if you watch this bit, it looks like he's reading his script that's just slightly off to the one side. That was all I noticed from this, was that his eyes would catch the glaze of the camera every so often, but quite often they were looking to the side. Like, I think he must have had something written down there, or whether he was trying to avert the gaze of the camera.
Lest anyone forget, this man is the father of the genius behind Firefly Funhouse and The Fiend.
Daddy of The Fiend.
His wife must be the most charismatic person in the world.
I'd love to know what Mike Rotunda makes of The Fiend. I bet he must be over the moon, like his son is just captivated the wrestling world in this way.
He must have married like Carol Burnett or something.
Yeah, it's he didn't get the that gene from IRS, did he?
No, Mike Rotunda, as fine of a technician as he is, and I always liked the IRS deep down, but it's just some of his promo work kind of just exposes how boring the character actually was. Mm-hmm. It's no Bright, let's put it that way.
Oh, geez, no chance. IRS is Funhouse. John! IRS is Funhouse.
IRS is not so Funhouse.
We're really glad you paid your tax.
And now here's a promo that is really lax.
I go, well done, mate. Well done, mate.
It was written by 28 writers who are hacks. You may like Smash, but I prefer Axe.
Hey, okay, end it there, because you end on a high. End on a high.
Yes. Tatanka versus Chris Hamrick.
Yes! Chris Hamrick from off of ECW. This is cool.
The man is nicknamed Chris Hamrick in ECW. He was part of the company in the later days. He was part of a stable called Hot Commodity, where every wrestler had some sort of like money connotation to their name. There was Easy Money, who was a pretty damn dynamic high flyer. You had Julio Dinero, which is the Spanish word for money. So for Chris Hamrick, because he's from the South, they came up with Confederate currency Chris Hamrick.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Which may not be the most tasteful name in the world, but...
He has a very special place in my heart, does Chris Hamrick. Because...
Is it for the bump he takes in this match and against the 1-2-3 kid?
It is not, no. It is because way before Extreme Warfare Revenge, the wrestling simulator, came out, we had a game called TNM7.
Hell yeah.
Allowed you to be a wrestling booker. Chris Hamrick was my world heavyweight champion TNM7.
Why?
I can't even remember why. And I just... I wish I could tell you why I decided that I was going to put Chris Hamrick in. I guess I must just, you must have just been who I could afford, who had quite high stats.
Okay.
Yeah, Chris Hamrick.
Chris Hamrick, to look at him, you see someone who idolized Ricky Morton.
He looked very Morton-esque here, didn't he?
He looked like Ricky Morton, and he takes bumps like a freaking champ. As evident in this match, before we get to Chris Hamrick's one-man show here, Vince updates us on the IRS Tatanka storyline by saying the IRS gave Tatanka a gift tax form for the headdress. And if this company is marketed to kids, what kid is going to care about gift taxes?
Well, the fact that IRS is evil and it's IRS trying to stop Tatanka having something nice.
Have him close down the orphanage or something. I mean, I don't, at 10 years old, I didn't know how gift taxes worked. I'd barely do it at 35.
That's a good shout.
I think Vince had to pay gift tax on something at some point in his life. He was pissed off about it. So he stayed out in the storyline. I'm going to have the evil guy. I'll levy a gift tax on the Tatanka.
I think Vince just generally gets quite upset with all of that, doesn't he?
Yeah, if the stories are true, apparently Hunter Hearst Helmsley was based on his snotty neighbors in Greenwich who didn't like him moving into the neighborhood.
Yeah, I remember hearing that story as well.
And I assume T.L. Hopper is based on a plumber who once screwed him over on the bill.
Isaac Yankum, bad experience with the dentist.
I get a lot of protein and crap big pieces, pal. So here you have Chris Hamrick, who is bumping like a rag doll, as if his job depended on it. And he takes this amazing bump at one point in the match. Him and Tatanka sort of counter each other on like an Irish whip attempt, and Hamrick charges at him feet first. Tatanka sidesteps, and Hamrick slides in between the top and middle rope to the floor, almost breaking his tailbone on the outside, not even hitting the ropes. Like he threw a dropkick at a ghost and missed.
I feel like he's done that before, or I've seen that done before. Like, there's a GIF, I'm sure, that does the rounds of that.
Yes, it was him versus the 1-2-3 kid.
Yeah, there it is.
And he charges kid kicks his legs out from underneath him, and Hamrick flies through the ropes doing the same thing.
That's the one. He do you know what? What a reckless son of a gun doing stuff like that.
He was, it was starting to become en vogue a little bit more, the indie guys who, took just the craziest and craziest of bumps. I mean, hey, Sean Waltman got a job, and he took some amazing bumps in his career. So since 1-2-3 kid opened that door, maybe perhaps a few more guys could sneak in and get jobs out of this by being bump machines. Although Kid is more than just a bump machine, obviously.
Exactly.
He's got a lot more psychology to his work, and he's one of the best underdog wrestlers ever. So Hamrick is just – he's getting beaten and beaten for like 12 minutes in this match, it feels like. Tatanka applies an arm twist about 6 minutes in. This is the longest squash match I've ever seen in my life.
It does go on, doesn't it?
Yes, it's like they missed the exit about four times. Like, Hamrick is like he's, as you would say, cream cracker at this point. And Tatanka just beating him down. And here's an arm twist. And we're back to, like, starting the freaking square one here.
Why Hamrick do you think this is so long? Is this just, like, bad road agenting?
It could be that, or could be... See, I had a thought, maybe the open match, Bushwhackers versus Quebecers, it's like supposed to go like at least 5 minutes longer, maybe.
Okay, now they're extending, yeah, possibly.
It could be. I mean, it's just an idea. Like, add a couple minutes onto this. The tongue is like, crap, I'm out of ideas. I've already hit you with a thunder fire power bomb, and I've hit you with the burning hammer. Now it's time for an armbar.
But yeah, I guess it's the whole thing because they're live. They're still trying to find the side with getting the timing right. So yeah, maybe
could
if
be that.
This match went under, they've had to drag this one out.
Either way, Hamrick he tries to mount a comeback, which is just the prelude to the Tatanka doing the war dance, and the end of the trail finishes. It was fun for a while, but then it just ran out of steam.
Yeah, it didn't really. I like seeing Hamrick. Nice to see him there. And it just sort of meandered. And it was there to make Tatanka look good. And Hamrick made Tatanka look like a force. But it could have been 5 minutes less.
How did Hamrick not get a job out of this?
I don't know. Because he was a machine in this. Like, you say, like, he was mumbling around like his job depended on it. It kind of did. Because he was trying to get work. He's just such a great seller. I think at this point, if I'm living in Vince McMahon's mind, which is probably a dangerous place to be, I reckon he probably took a look at Hamrick and went, he's too small, he's thin, he's like, he didn't have much muscle definition or anything like that. He had a bit of a mullet going on. And
he is kind of pale.
Yeah, he could have done with a bit of an overhaul look-wise going into the new generation.
At least Sean Waltman had a tan and he looked a little bit, had a bit more definition to his look, even though he was very, very thin. It is aesthetic, and I could see why maybe Vince would have passed on Hamrick. Put him under a mask or something, though.
Yeah, you could have done something with him if you were clever with it. But hey, look, he got all the love he needed in my version of TNM 7, so that's all that matters.
You know, Hamrick. I was gonna say Hamrick was in TNA briefly under a mask in 2002.
Was he?
You know what his name was?
Oh God, go on.
Crimson Dragon.
For real?
I'm not making this up. Go look it up.
Crimson Dragon.
So Chris Hammer can play, you know, a mysterious masked man if you just put a mask on him.
Crimson Dragon. I'm just Googling him now, just out of interest. And I'm getting links to the video game Crimson Dragon.
Okay, put in Crimson Dragon Chris Hamrick. Make it easier on yourself.
Which might suggest why he didn't continue. There might have been a lawsuit pending or something like that. which might have been... Right, okay, Chris Hamrick.
Robbed him all of his Confederate currency. The courts did.
I mean, that's true. okay, right. I mean, it's not a bad look.
No, yeah, but I mean, it's
Chris Hamrick gear, like the red leather Eddie Murphy from Raw get up.
Now there's a thought. Chris Hamrick don't stand up.
Oh Jesus, God love him. But there you go. Incidentally, you popped when I said TNM 7. I assume you've played it yourself.
Oh yes, I would just have put 50 men into a Royal Rumble and watch to see who won if I was bored enough. Like, hey, look at that. The winner's Ahmed Johnson. He threw out a jobber Tom Stone to win it.
That sounds like a great Rumble.
It was tremendous. First one gone was John Cena. Like, okay, this is for the Intergalactic World Championship. We're going to have the Mulkies take on space aliens.
I want to book your company. I want to work for you. I want to work for you.
I need to get some sponsors.
We need to finance this. So we have Pettengill doing the post-WrestleMania report. They show Ronda Shearer at ringside, who's having a great time.
Is she perhaps drunk?
Too great. It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, who am I to, you know, judge someone's demeanor like that? I just want to get to the next match now.
No, because before you do, I want to quickly pull up Todd Pettengill on this, who's doing his final WrestleMania, his WrestleMania report, and he says, if I had a dollar for every limo I saw, I'd be a millionaire. Todd Pettengill saw a million limousines leaving Madison Square Garden.
Well, yeah, they were having the 24 hours of Le Mans or whatever it is outside New York.
Oh, so it was the same three, like over and over again.
Yes.
Limoirs, 24 hours.
So.
Come on then. You have been, like, I had a message from Justin when I woke up this morning. I think it was when I woke up this morning. Every day's blurred into one this week. Thanks, wrestling. I had a message off you saying, wait till you see who Diesel's facing. And, mate, you didn't disappoint me. I'm going to shut up and let you steer this bad boy.
Diesel versus Ken Lucia. Now, a lot of these jobbers I remember because someone went on the greater fame, like Glenn Ruth or Dwayne Gill or whoever. Some of them are just standard jobbers of the day, like Steve Lombardi or Reno Riggins or whoever. But sometimes we get the ones that I just don't remember. And I didn't remember Ken Lucia. So in my mind's eye, I'm picturing like any Ken I know when I see this guy's name. It's like, okay, like I have an Uncle Ken. I work with a guy named Ken.
Ken Raper.
This is a different Ken. Yes, there was a jobber named Ken Raper at one point, which is a interesting name. I'm friends with him on Facebook, actually.
Your friends? Whoa, stop. Right, mate, you cannot drop a bombshell like that and just move on. You cannot drop a bombshell like that and move on. You're friends with Ken Raper.
And for some reason, his photo is Matt Hardy on a lawnmower.
Mate, why is he not on our show?
Because he hasn't come up in the rotation yet.
So?
We're going to work up to that point.
I want Raper's half hour immediately.
Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. Get Ken Raper on here. I'm excited. I mean, but honestly, promise me, if we do get a Ken Raper sighting on Monday Night Raw, you will extend the invite for him to join us.
I will do my best.
Yes! Come on, Ken Raper!
All I can do is my best.
Good. That's all we can do.
So back to this Ken.
Sorry, back Ken, to the main Ken.
Ken Lucia, who has apparently wrestled under the name Emilio Alcia before. This guy looks like a cross between Norman Smiley and Jimmy Snuka.
He is an interesting experiment. He's Ken Lucia. I like the fact I did a bit of research and there is very little about him, as you found out, I believe, as well. I found the other name for him, which is Emilia Lucia.
Emilio Alcia, I think it was.
Alcia. And I love the fact that he went to a booker and he went, you bully me as Ken Lucia, and I think it might be a bit difficult to say. Okay, you could be Emilio or Lucia. No, the Ken bit was fine. It was the other bit that, never mind.
Why'd you reverse the U and the L?
For fun.
He has a skullet. He's about 5'7", and he's wearing cheetah print tights.
He is an experiment.
He's like someone hit random on the creative wrestle on a video game.
You would expect him to turn up as one of those generic guys in the My Career mode on WWE 2K.
What I'm going to check right now and see if this guy had any more. This is only match 1994. Damn it.
He only needs one match. He made enough money off this match to retire early.
Yes, he was the one who set Diesel on his path of destruction.
He made enough money to buy the Broken Skullet Ranch where he lives to this day.
If Ken Lucia is still out there, I hope he's doing well.
Oh, big love, Ken.
I'm watching this like 1 o'clock in the morning. I almost spit my drink out when I saw this guy. What the hell?
What a choice. Like, I know that a lot of the times, like the enhancement lads that are knocking around at the end of a show for a show are just guys from the local area who were just looking for a bit of work. So they kind of mince around backstage, waiting for the opportunity to do some work. Like, I just wonder, like, because they would have gone, okay, all these guys have turned up. Who's that guy there with the skullet? Who's 5 foot nothing? Oh, that's Ken. All right, get Ken out there. He's fighting Diesel.
He's the Prince of Poughkeepsie, Ken Lucia.
Is it? Of course, the obvious thing is the King of Poughkeepsie. He is now. I'm firing up TNM7 later. He is, I think maybe because he's just this short, odd-looking fellow, it makes Diesel look all the more badass and intimidating.
I'm assuming that's what it was. It's definitely a size thing. It's kind of like how when they have like the women's matches today. They have that one really short referee refereeing them. So that Becky and them seem like a little bit taller and a little bit more larger than life. It is all about aesthetic.
Yeah, it does make sense. But yeah, so Diesel looks in good form here. Big Diesel chance as well.
Yeah, Diesel just beating the crap out of Lucia as you'd expect. It's just a completely one-sided squash. During this match, Savage implies that he and Ronda Shear did the wild thing together.
Yeah, they kind of give a little bit of a hint that Savage had a naughty night with Ronda.
Oh, more than a hint. says Savage basically, he's like Chris Farley, the bus driver, and Billy Madison. Like, and we got it on, if you know what I mean. No, you didn't. Well, you can imagine what it would be like if we did. Yeah. Okay. No yelling on the bus. Anyway. Vince implies during this match that Diesel's going to challenge Razor for the Intercontinental belt soon, which is interesting because Diesel hasn't really, I mean, he had that great run in the Royal Rumble match where he threw out 7 guys in a row, and he's beaten up everybody he's faced jobber-wise, but he hasn't really wrestled much otherwise. Now all of a sudden he's contending for a belt, so obviously they're getting ready for the push now.
Yeah, they're getting him all warmed up now.
Yeah, they've turned the stove on. They're going to heat him as fast as they can. And Diesel's going to be on his way to the top very, very soon. He hasn't even won a belt yet, but in 8 months he'll be a Triple Crown champion.
Scary, isn't it? How quick sometimes the ascendancy could occur.
Snake Eyes hits. Vince plugs the movie Major League on USA Network, which is a great movie if you've never seen it. And then he hits the jack, and Diesel hits the jackknife on poor Ken Lucia, and that's it.
Jackknife. This is the first outing of the jackknife, I do believe.
I think you may be right.
The move formerly known as the Atom Smasher from Atom Bomb.
Formerly known as the Power Bomb from the guys who used the Power Bomb.
That as well. But wasn't the issue here that Atom Bomb got the Power Bomb taken off him now? Because they went, we just want Kev to have it.
Was that how it worked?
I heard rumor and innuendo that Adam Bomb at this point had been told he needed to change his finisher because the Adam Smasher was no longer his, and they wanted to give Kevin Nash the Jackknife Powerbomb, and they wanted to make it special, so they wanted him to be the guy that did the power bombs.
I could believe that.
Yeah, I mean, believe that too. I'd be gutted if I was Adam Bomb, though.
I mean, you can't have too many guys doing the same move. That would kind of muddy the waters there.
And it feels like quite a Click-esque thing to do, because there is this backstage group starting to form in very, very, very early days of that. And you can kind of imagine Shawn Michaels getting Vince McMahon's ear saying, hey, that guy does a powerbomb. That's gonna make Kev's look rubbish. And Vince going, you're right, pal. Bomb! Do something else!
So he starts doing the Razor's Edge.
Yeah, sweet chin music all around.
I call it the Mushroom Cloud.
Damn it!
Starts doing the Sharpshooter. I call this radiation poisoning. Starts doing everybody else's moves.
It's like, fine, I'll do everything else other than a powerbomb.
I'm like, Chris here, I have 45 million finishers.
His moveset was a bit like that, though. Like, I think we've talked about it a few times with Adam Bomb. Like, he has a really revolutionary moveset.
Yeah, he's doing like all these agile power moves for a guy his size, like 6'6", 290.
He's a beast.
He was a little green at times. I mean, it was a little obvious. Like I say, transitioning from one move to the next, but he did hit some big moves that looked really cool.
Yeah.
So next week we have Lex Luger versus Rick the Mob of Martel.
They bill this as Luger's angry. He is angry. So angry. He didn't win the belt. He's angry. Yeah, he was shaking Bret Hart's hand at the end of the night. He's angry. He's well angry. No, he's not. He's fine about it. He's angry. He's fighting Martel.
I like to imagine that Luger was okay when he left the Garden at WrestleMania. He was kind of like, I'm all right. I'm all right. Got screwed over again. Didn't win the belt. I'm fine. Power of positive thinking. He walks outside. There's a parking ticket on the Lex Express. and then he had the transition scene, like Me, Myself, and Irene, when Jim Carrey started shaking a little bit, and the evil version of himself came out.
It's funny because I think it's one of the first times you've had a more modern reference than I, because I was about to say he had a Michael Douglas falling down moment.
That's even better, actually. Lex Luger with a flat top haircut on the golf course carrying a shotgun. Falling down is both hilarious and oddly hitting close to home at the same time.
Quite often, my dad, in years gone by in his job, has sometimes equated some days to having a falling down day, which is like a Michael Douglas falling down day. Like something's gonna finish him off.
So we have an interview with the new WWF champion, Bret the Hitman Hart, and I believe this is the birth of Pyro on Monday Night Raw.
Oh, that's a good shout, actually. It never occurred to me that this could be the birth of Pyro.
I mean, I think maybe I just missed it before because, like, I have Pyro blindness. People complain about how, you know, like, there's been no Pyro for the last 2 years, and I go, really? I haven't noticed.
Wow. Because
to me, it's like, you know, the aesthetic. Like, I love small aesthetic. Like, I love just, like, a simple aisle way. People need, like, I need these big LED sets or special for pay-per-views. Not me.
This is why we're buzzing for NWA Power.
Yes, because they have no budget.
Exactly.
I mean, not say they have no budget, but it's,
no budget, mate.
bologna sandwiches are catering.
Even Jimmy said, we're excited, but we can't do it like this forever. He's even said, we're looking for sponsors and advertisers, so we can't do this like this forever.
We'll hot tag for food.
I love the blatant honesty of, we're starting a new TV show. We're starting a brand new era in NWA. Now, we can't afford it for a long time, so you're going to need to help us out at some point.
We need another rock star to finance it. We're bringing Eddie Vedder in.
Chad Kroger's got some money. Let's take some money off Kroger.
Look at this budget cut. Every time I do, I fall in a rut.
No, better yet. It's like he's there going, okay, so that's the financial details. Over to Chad Kroger for the ratings. Look at this graph.
It reminds me that CM Punk once had staff.
Mate, we made some classic songs today.
Yes, but speaking of classic, we have Bret Hart in his bitchin' long coat that he wore at WrestleMania 10.
I like the
Why
long
did he
coat.
Keep this?
I like the long coat a lot.
Why did he keep this? This thing was awesome.
I think it suits him. It really does suit him. The short one makes him look a little bit preppy, but this makes him look like a badass.
It's the second best coat in wrestling history behind Drew McIntyre's duster.
Oh, that big leather duster's a beaut. You're forgetting, of course, the Repo Man's Dirty Mac, but that's fine.
You are right. We need to make a Mount Rushmore a wrestling coach.
No. I'm Adam Pacitti from Cultaholic.com, and this is 10 wrestling coats that you've forgotten. Join us.
Here are some sartorial choices for you to enjoy. So Vince goes over the finish of the match while talking to Bret when Bret beats Yokozuna. Imagine calling the hotline for main results during the first half hour of the show, and then Vince goes in and says, here's what happened in the main event.
Oh, you'd be furious, wouldn't you?
I'm not getting that $7 back.
Or if you like, I don't want to ring the hotline because I don't want to know what happened. And then here comes your new champion, Bret Hart. Vince, spoilers, man. Spoilers.
God, their priorities are all over the place.
They really, really are.
So Bret gives your typical Bret interview. You know, all challengers get a shot, including Yoko, whenever he wants his rematch. He's the fighting champion. He's going to pick up where he left off a year ago. All about Hogan's shadow over him. Well, he doesn't mention that part, but it's implied. And Vince loudly points out through his razor blade voice that Owen cleanly pinned you yesterday. You were going for the victory roll, but he fell on top of you and he pinned you clean.
Call the hotline.
What do you think of that, Brett? Let the crowd booze. The crowd boos what Vince is doing to Brett, which is foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And Brett does concede that Owen beat him cleanly, but he stole the champ. And he goes ahead and quotes Mick Jagger, "You can't always get what you want while holding the belt, but sometimes you get what you need."
That was a nice line. That's it. That was a nice line. I'm always a bit about Bret Hart as a mic piece. And he comes out sometimes with the old line, but a lot of the times I feel like he sounds bored.
It's just Brett's demeanor.
I think it just very much is his demeanor.
Yeah, Brett, you know, he's not like Mr. Fake Energy. He's one of those, you get what you get, and there is sincerity to what he's saying. He's not going to be all, you know, rah-rah cheerleader when he says it, that's all.
Yeah, that's true. You are correct.
If Brett tried to cut a promo like The Rock, he would come off so fake.
He would, actually. It wouldn't suit him at all. It would not suit him at all.
Yeah, so this is how Brett is going to be. And honestly, he's not a great promo, but he comes off sincere, and that's part of him. That's part of why he was so popular, because you believed him when he talked. Because
he wasn't the charismatic, but he was real.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. Although he compares himself to Robert De Niro and Hogan to Elvis. You know, it's two different styles, but they're both popular for different reasons.
That's a good shout. That's a good shout. I'm excited by the prospect of Brett versus Owen for the title.
Oh, you have no idea. Well, yeah. Actually, if you've seen the matches, then you probably have. But
yeah, I'm playing it as if I'm watching the, like, I am watching a lot of these for the first time ever, because this was an era that I missed out on. But it's at this point, I'm like, as a fan trying to be in the moment, I'm like, ooh, Brett versus Owen for the WWF Championship. Ooh, yeah, cool.
Definitely, it's Brett versus Owen. How can you go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of how can you go wrong, we have Raven interviewing Burt Reynolds at WrestleMania.
This is ace. Burt Reynolds is battered. Burt Reynolds is at WrestleMania and he is hammered, saying it's the second best time he's ever had.
Burt Reynolds, this is in between his career peak and his rebirth with Boogie Nights.
Oh.
And Burt just, when Burt said, "I'm happy to be here and you are that at WrestleMania 10, he meant it.
Yeah, he had a great night. He had a lot to drink. It's just like his eyes are rolling in the back of his head. He just looks away with the fairies. I love it so much.
And they put Raven to interview him. That was made it even better.
Oh, this bit is just beautiful.
Whatever you're doing, just stop right now, put on the WWE Network. Find the bit where Raven interviews Burt Reynolds at WrestleMania 10. You will not be disappointed.
You will thank us. You will thank us.
If they had announced during this show that Burt Reynolds was next week's Raw guest commentator, I would say, Tom, we're doing two shows this week.
Mate,
I can't wait to watch that one.
Double dip. We do two. We get straight into it. Straight amongst it. I want Burt back. Bring back drunk Burt Reynolds. I don't want any old Burt Reynolds. I want drunk Burt Reynolds.
And if we can't have that, then just give us a Norm MacDonald imitating Burt Reynolds.
Give us Richard from Friends. Who I often get mixed up with Burt Reynolds.
So we come to the main event. And this is the main event anywhere in Memphis. Jeff Jarrett versus Coco Beware.
The returning Coco Beware. Big pop for Beware. This really is roar after WrestleMania.
He has his bird music, but he's still wearing his high energy outfit.
He's in a bit of a mixed place at the moment, is Coco.
That'd be like John Cena entering to The Time Is Now while wearing his prototype outfit.
That's quite good. Actually, yeah, that's true. It would be, wouldn't it? Or Steve Austin entering to the Ringmaster music. Oh, wait, he's always looked the same. That doesn't work. Carry on.
Well, Austin glues on his Hollywood blonde hairstyle.
Yeah, that was it. Who was it? We were talking. It might have been. I think it was on the SmackDown review with Matthew, where he talked about like they should have rolled back the years at an ECW show and had Steve Austin come out in a blonde wig. But like, I'm picturing that with the Steve Austin music playing, like this beautiful flowing blonde locks from Steve Austin who's cussing and drinking.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. It also looks like it's like college-age Woody Harrelson.
Oh, God, it's quite an image. It's quite an image. And this is quite a main event.
Yeah, Savage goes on a roll here. First making fun of Vince's sore throat, and then making fun of the suit of Nikolai Volkoff, who's in the front row, wearing his red and yellow striped suit that he's known for.
Right, I don't want too many spoilers, Justin, but is this going somewhere with Volkoff?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay, as long as it's going somewhere. I just wasn't sure at this point.
I love Nikolai, but unfortunately, yes. So Savage and Vince are really putting Burt Reynolds over as if they were hoping to hire him for some reason. Like, come on, if it was Burt Reynolds versus Bam Bam at WrestleMania 11 instead of LT, I would have loved it, and so would you.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds in his longest yard uniform.
I'd be all right with that. Only drunk Burt Reynolds.
It's like the drunken master.
Yes, drunken master Burt Reynolds versus Bam Bam Bigelow, WrestleMania 11.
Can you imagine the buy rate that show would have done?
That is on the horizon, isn't it, that WrestleMania?
And then Burt cashes in the briefcase and beats Diesel for the belt.
that
blast off
sublime.
We're gonna blast off into the new decade with the guy from Smokey and the Bandit as world champion. Yes. At one point during this match, Coker throws Jarrett to the floor, and Jarrett says, and I'm quoting here, "Dadgummit, he pulled my hair."
Dadgummit! What? I don't think I've ever heard "Dadgummit" used on a wrestling show, and I don't think I ever will again.
It's a guy who, Jarrett was like in his 20s at this point, had it been some like 80-year-old prospector, I could see "Dadgummit," but not from flowing locks Jeff Jarrett. "Dadgummit!"
It's an odd look. It's a very odd look.
Jarrett's an old soul. So this match is as basic as it gets. It's as milquetoasty as milquetoast can be. And Vince gets so bored during this match that all of a sudden he goes, how about what Mr. Perfect did yesterday to Lex Luger? Like, he's reminding himself to keep the audience engaged. Like, it's like he's going into a lull. Oh, perfect. But yeah, he did something yesterday. It was like noticeable boredom on his part. And then we go right to the finish, which Coco, he's supposed to duck his head for Jarrett hit the running DDT. There's a noticeable lull there.
There was.
Like, time stands still for about 3 seconds. Coco goes, okay, and then he ducks the head, and Jarrett just DDTs him for the win.
Yeah, that was, it felt a bit like, you could see Coco get into position for it. And it sort of, I would say it took me out of it, but this main event dragged. It wasn't even that long. Just didn't flow.
It's like Jarrett had to tell him, hey, your shoe's untied. Hang on, I'm going to bend over real slow and look. Hey, they're not. Boom, DDT.
That would have been a funnier ending, to be fair.
Well, we got a much livelier finish to the show, thankfully, because Jarrett decided to go to the floor. Starts mouthing off to Randy Savage. Probably because of the whole outlaw territory thing from 15 years ago when the Poffos ran Memphis. And
they won't leave those memories alone. They're digging them straight back up.
We have Jarrett, Coco, and Savage out here. This is Memphis personified. And given the outfits all three are wearing, just the garish colors, it's like Memphis with Mardi Gras outfits.
It's quite a garish potential collision here between Jarrett and Savage.
I think someone ran over a 64 box of crayons with like a steamroller. So Jarrett's mouthing off. Savage throws a drink at him. Hits him right in the face. Sadly, Jarrett does not say "Dadgummit" after that. That should have been his catchphrase.
I think if he'd done it, he would have had a t-shirt, "The Rival Don't Pee Me Off."
You could say piss. It's fine.
Oh, God. Yeah, you can actually. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a natural bodily function. We all do it. But anyway, Savage versus Jarrett could have been a really fun match, but we're not going to get it because, God forbid, we have Savage wrestle.
Then why tease it? That's my thinking. Why are we teasing it?
And to make it worse,
I'm thinking this would be a great match to have, Savage versus Jarrett, because if someone can get the best out of Jeff Jarrett and make him into a great heel, or cement him as a heel worth watching, it'd be Randy Savage. So Jarrett's in the ring. He's egging him on. Savage is standing on the commentary table doing the Simon Gotch put up your dukes motions with his arms. It is gif-worthy, or gif-worthy, or whatever it is. That killed me. That was the highlight of the show as far as I was concerned.
I just don't know why they're teasing us with this.
And this is the hottest the fans have been all night, too. Savage could challenge a random homeless guy to a match, and the crowd want to see it because it's Randy Savage.
Yeah, that's true. He's hot property at the moment.
Savage doing anything is going to get the crowd into it because it's Randy's freaking Savage.
I tell you what I want Savage to do.
What's that?
To call me on the WWF hotline.
Oh, yes, because we have a little commercial here after Savage and Coco beat up Jarrett together. Said we never got a higher energy with Savage and Coco. And we have a commercial where you can actually have a wrestler place a personal phone call to a person of your choosing. You can have Bret Hart wish you happy birthday. Give Undertaker wish you well on your job promotion from beyond the grave, mind you. You can have Bart Gunn wish you well on your upcoming hernia surgery. For just $10 a call, this was an actual thing.
For the same price as the WWE Network is now, you could have Razor Ramon give you a call to say, I'm glad the results were negative. And everything about this advert, I'm sure you had something similar in the...
Hey man, gonorrhea is no joke. I'm glad you don't have it, Chico.
Gonorrhea don't last forever, but bad guys do.
Actually, it does last forever.
Oh god. But I'm kidding. It lasts forever. But I just love the campy nature of this. I don't know whether you had. In America, because over here we had an advert in the 90s for something called Chatback. It was 0898 50 50 50, and it had this garish advert that came on telly late at night, and the video featured call now for chats with new friends, and the advert was just guys on the phone and girls on the phone, like with big bold colours behind them, not dissimilar to this. This felt like wrestlers Chatback. At this point, the idea of these wrestlers giving you a call. The best part of it was the last thing they suggested, or maybe you could have them give your friend a friendship call. And they cut to Owen Hart cutting a promo, who's interrupted by the phone ringing, and he answers it, and it's Brett, and he immediately slams the phone down.
That was pretty funny, actually.
I loved it. This was the highlight of the show for me. This advert. This wrestler's call chat line.
I would so have Doug and call you.
Oh, mate, that's mean. I would have. Do you know who I'd have call you? Ken Lucia.
I'd be totally fine. That'd be the happiest phone call that I ever get.
I'd have Ken Lucia congratulate you on your car passing its MOT.
Oh, I wonder what limits there were for this. Oh. like,
mate, I'm paying $10. I should get whatever I want.
I want Rene Goulet to call you and wish you well on having multiple podcasts.
Right, I've got an idea. Right, at DRH Writing on Twitter, at Tom Campbell on Twitter, we're together with at Cultaholic. Which new generation wrestler would you like to call you on the WWF hotline, and for what reason?
Actually, if you had to do it today, who would it be?
Oh.
Like the current wrestler. I want to have Mojo call Adam.
Oh, that'd be... Oh, God, he'd love that. He'd love that to death. I would have Rusev call Ross.
Oh, my God.
That'd just be phenomenal to see. Or better yet, Bobby Lashley to call Ross to say what it was like kissing Rusev's wife.
It tasted like strawberries.
What an odd reference that was.
Or you just have Rusev. Have Ross call Rusev. It'll cheer Rusev up. And they can form a team Rossef.
That sounds like a disease.
I have Rossef. It's like gout, but worse. See, I would have, if I had to have someone call you, if Duggan's not an option, then I'm kind of out of ideas. Because he'd be the first one I pick, obviously, just to, like, hey, tough guy, I heard you were talking crap about my match with Sean, because I want to sell.
I want Duggan just to completely sound off on me. Hey, you tough guy, I heard you were talking crap about me. I want Duggan to call Tom and just cut him down to size.
I don't ask for much out of life.
I heard you talking crap about me. I don't know if I want Duggan saying that to me. I'd feel sad.
I mean, if my 10 bucks is riding on this, that's what I'm getting out of it. I mean, my money's worse.
Your suggestions, please, on Twitter, at Tom Campbell or at JRH Writing. Please, more suggestions for that would be amazing.
Hey, tough guy, I heard you beat that paternity test. That's great, now they pay child support. Oh!
Stop talking crap about me.
I listen to your stupid podcast.
Oh, gosh. Oh, it's too funny.
So we come back to the end of the show here, because I don't know how we're going to top that, but damn it, they try. Yeah. Plug next week's action. It's 1-2-3 Kid Wrestling, Owen Hart's in action, plus Luger versus Martel. Didn't Savage Vince share the most awkward high 10 ever?
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Oh, it was people who'd never done a high 10 before doing a high 10.
It's like watching two people who've been unthawed out of a block of ice trying to imitate human behavior. Do you remember like how we did things?
Oh, gosh.
Because Vince and Savage are best buds forever. Wait 8 months from now. And that's it for this week's show. That is your post-WrestleMania episode of Raw.
Well, it had all the trappings of a WrestleMania after Raw. A Raw after WrestleMania, rather. You know, big returns. You know, some Coco Beware action, some Bushwhacker action, and a hotline. So we had all the main things from a post-WrestleMania shenanigan. I enjoyed the hotline bit. Everything else kind of washed over me a little bit.
Yeah, it's still a throwaway show at this point.
But as you say, we are now in the lean years.
Oh, we are leaner than ever.
Can we get any leaner? We're going to find out next week when we reconvene here on the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. He is at JRH Writing. I am at Tom Campbell. We will speak to you next week. I love you. Bye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.